DW Africa Link.
Gender equality is a fundamental human right and a foundation for a peaceful, prosperous, and sustainable world. Women and girls represent half of the world's population and therefore also half of its potential. However, gender inequality persists everywhere and stagnates social progress. There's been progress over the last decades, but the world is not on track to achieve gender equality by 2030. These are not my words, but it's according to the United Nations. The million-dollar question, though, is why? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Despite working in an environment with deep-seated gender biases, maternal hindrances, workplace stereotypes, and for many, a lack of mentorship to succeed, women leaders continue to rise. In many countries, especially in Africa, there are no systems in place to support women succeed, especially in leadership. Yet, they persist. So how can women in leadership roles maneuver the many challenges they face? Joining me for a conversation on this is South Africa's Basic Education Minister, Siviwe Gwarube. The 35-year-old South African politician has served as Minister of Basic Education since July 2024. She is a member of the Democratic Alliance, DA, and was the chief whip of the official opposition between August 2022 and June 2024. She joined the National Assembly of South Africa in the May 2019 general election. Also on the panel is Dr. Mary Ayim Segbefia, the head of the Broadcast Journalism Department at Ghana's University of Media, Arts and Communications, NAFTI campus. She leads a diverse team of lecturers in her department to impart knowledge to students. Thank you so much, fellow women, for joining me today on this particular episode where we discuss issues to do with women. So I will start with you, Honorable Minister. First, tell our audiences about your political journey, even at this youthful age.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. Of course, as you have stated in your introduction, women on the African continent and in the world make up most of the population. And in African politics in particular, young people make up a huge number of the citizens. And so one of the things that was always an anomaly for me was how many leaders, and there are, that are significantly older than the population that they serve. And it's always been something that I pondered as to, is it because of youth apathy that we don't have enough women in the space? Or is it because the environment is hostile to young people, particularly young women? Of course, there are many theories around the world, and many people have done studies about why it is that we cannot get enough young people, particularly young women, into political office. And so in 2019, I was faced with the choice whether or not to join political office, and I decided to do so at the age of 30 years old. And it has been an interesting 6 years, but also eventful, and has been really, littered with many an opportunity for myself. But it's simply not good enough. One of the things that I would often warn about is that we must never, as women in leadership and as young people in leadership, be content to being the only people in the room or the only people around the decision-making table. And that once we do do gain access, we must open and, you know, send down the elevator so that more and more young people and young women can get in. And so it's, as I said, personally, it's been a fulfilling journey of being able to serve the people of South Africa. And now most recently, having been appointed as the Minister of Basic Education, really the service element has been something that really sits with me and sits heavily.
Absolutely. Now, just to take it to you, Mary, tell us about your own story as well. You lead a team of lecturers in your journalism department at the University of Media, Arts and Communication in Ghana. Was this the dream growing up as a young Mary?
Yeah, thank you very much, Josie. So I discovered my leadership abilities when I got to senior high school, or should I say the college. And so given responsibilities to be a leader or a prefect threw me into that space. And then climbing through my academic surgeon, I got more opportunities. And so entering the university and then entering the newsroom for the first time, I started as an intern and then rose through the ranks to a reporter, then the assignment editor, and then a producer. The next step was to be a news editor, but then I left the newsroom and then went into corporate Ghana, where I practiced public relations. I was a public relations manager. And then I moved into academics. And so starting as an assistant lecturer, and then to the position of a lecturer, then I had this position as a head of department, leading a team of 8 people, meaning that there are 5 males and 3 female in my department. And so far, so good. I am still here carrying out that leadership position.
Yeah, back to you, Honorable Minister. Listening to your story, it really shows that it's been a dream as you grew up in South Africa to get to this level. But you said more still needs to be done. That means you're still climbing the ladder. But let's talk about your position right now. How has it been so far for you in your new role as a Minister for Basic Education?
It's a huge responsibility, one that I don't take lightly, because of course, this is the difficulty, both the difficulty and the privilege with being a first or the youngest minister or the first woman to hold a position or the youngest person to hold a position or the first Black person to hold a certain position, that there is always the pressure of how will you perform? Will you essentially represent people well enough so that almost the world can accept that it is okay, and it is not only okay, but it is recommended that young people, that women are occupying positions of leadership. And so going into the role, of course, you have that kind of innate pressure that no one says, it's unspoken, but you know that it exists because you know that there is almost an invisible audience that is there that says, can we trust young people with big responsibilities in government? Can we trust young people to lead the biggest department in terms of a budget in government? And so you know that there is that kind of pressure because there exists a pressure for women to prove themselves as almost this homogeneous group that doesn't exist for men, where you have to almost on behalf of women in the world say it is absolutely okay to entrust us with these positions because I'm not just a woman, but I'm a leader. I'm not a woman leader. It doesn't have to be qualified. I'm a leader just like my a male counterpart. So firstly, there's been that mental, having to quieten the voice that says, you are not just in this position because by dint of your gender and your age. You are in this position because you've earned it. And you're in this position because you are capable.
And, you know, what inspired this podcast was what is happening in the US, Kamala Harris. This is a woman, a powerful woman, and who knows, most likely to become the US president. But there's been, you know, a lot of negative comments, even from the opposite gender, from men and all. So I just want to know from you, Are these challenges same for other women you know who also occupy political offices in South Africa?
Of course, these are big challenges. I think, look, firstly, I think I must first say state up front that South Africa has been really good at managing and incorporating women leadership in public office. I think our parliament, if I stand corrected, but I think our parliament is sitting at about 40-60 split between women and men. And of course, some political parties are better than others in being able to field women in leadership positions. And that's something that we'll be able to filter through at a parliamentary level. So South Africa has been quite good, I think, in the past 30 years of democracy in recognizing women to be able to lead. But, you know, you look at statistics like, you know, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, for instance, and you look at companies that are led by women, you realize that the percentage is far, you know, smaller than it is and that it should be. And the reality here is that, of course, you know, it's not just political leadership that we should be recognizing the relevance of women. Is that we know that there's literature that supports what we are saying, that the more diverse your leadership team is, the more representative that your leadership team is, the more successful any company, any organization, any government is likely to be, because you've got different representation of opinions, of mm-hmm. lived experiences informing decision-making. Now, South Africa's challenge is now slightly different. So it's not just about recognizing women at the decision-making level and at the decision-making table. Now we've got to make sure that their role is substantive, because it's one thing to have the numbers, but it's a whole other thing to make sure that the women who are in the room have the influence. And I think mm-hmm. that's the level at which we are at.
Yeah. Now to you, Dr. Mary, how difficult has it been for you getting to this level and playing the role of head of department?
I must say that it has not been easy, but most often my competences and the wealth of experience I've gathered over the period have been able to bring me this far. So people get to know what I've done and then they make recommendations. So in my school, in my university, there are three campuses. The University of Media Arts and Communication has three campuses, and I am in the Institute of Film and Television campus. And in this space, our acting rector is a female, and then the acting dean is a female. And then we have female heads of department and then male heads of department as well. So when we gather in a space of decision-making, you hear subtle comments like, the women are in charge here. Let's also sit up and hear what they have to say, that kind of thing. So most often there's this kind of double burden. You have to do a little more extra work to be able to get your decisions or the things that you want to be done to be carried out. So it's a bit difficult when people you're working with see the gender instead of the position. And knowing that you have the capability, you have a competency to carry out the task that is assigned to that position. Some of the challenges that come with this role, for example, not as a head of department, I'm referring to probably where I've worked before. You hear something like, if there are older men and you are their superior, you hear something like, I have your type at home. As a wife, as a sister, or as a daughter. Very subtle.
Honorable Minister, do you hear that?
Very subtle.
I think, Dr. Mary, it's not even very subtle. I mean, I think it's downright sexist, absolutely. And the unfair thing, sorry, Dr. Mary, to cut you off, the unfair thing, and I would love to hear your thoughts here, the unfair thing about also being a woman in leadership, and as I talked about this invisible audience that's looking at you to see if you're going to prove people right or wrong, is that the unfair thing is that women have to also play the role of having to call out misogyny and sexism in spaces where it's a distraction to your work. You should
Absolutely.
Be department and not having to fight the battle of telling of teaching people how to treat women right.
Yes, and sometimes so there's a gathering and there is time to serve. People automatically assume that because you are a woman, you are supposed to serve the team,
even if you're their superior. Not even that. Anyway, anyone can serve, men or women, right?
Yes, but then automatically they assume that because you are the female here, you should start serving. But as a head of department, I try not to micromanage my staff, both male and female. When I give them a task, I give you the timelines and I leave you the space to work. But I'm always available for you to seek for clarification if you need one. And so that's one of the ways that I've been able to rise above the challenge. Other times, do I do a lot of dialogue? I do a lot of dialogue and I do a lot of delegation. And in this way, I conscientize them that we are a team and this position is rotational. It could be you there tomorrow. It could be you there tomorrow. So the kind of support that you need to give to make the work flow should readily be made available.
And you interact with other female leaders in such big institutions and other institutions and fields of work in Ghana. How common are these challenges you mentioned for other women leaders?
Yes. So apart from the sexism that comes in there, there's also the sometimes they are seen as emotional when the women want to express themselves in terms of their work. And probably at that particular time, their voice is a little above the norm. And then you hear things like, why are you being emotional? And so they say things to just bring you down. And then it's a distraction because you're not going to think about, am I being emotional? Or am I
exactly
dealing
what
with
the minister said, because you don't know now. And you're like, they're disturbing your work.
Yes, it's very distractive. So yeah, why are you being emotional? Or other things like the sexism we talked about. You can be my daughter, you know. There are people in the organization and then they bring in a young woman to be their superior. And then the older men, for example, will tell you, sometimes women will tell you that is not how we do things here. You have just come. You need to study the environment. So change management, they observe, is very difficult to manage when you're a woman in a leadership position. And then there's the typical work-life balance. How are you going to work in the office and then manage your other responsibilities that come with you being a woman, a mother, or a wife? So these are some of the challenges that some women face in their positions as leaders in the workspace.
And Honorable Minister, why do you think these challenges still exist for women in political leadership, or not just political leadership, in leadership?
It's a culture. It's simply a culture and a culture change that needs to happen. And I don't even think, you know, I think gone are the days where we start to problematize just the African continent. I think because there is a temptation to say, you know, these things exist only on the African continent because that continent is deeply traditional. And I think that's not true. I mean, I have been on panels with women around the world and they'll tell you very clearly the kind of sexism and misogyny they experience. So I want to make an example of a leader that I admire, Prime Minister Ardern. Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand. And you will recall how when she decided to step down, I mean, the comments and the pushback or the, the reaction from the world was to say, of course, she could never handle it. Of course, you know, it was always going to be a tough position for a woman and all of those things. But here was somebody who was, Jacinda was simply saying, I have done my bit and I am now good to step back and to pursue other responsibility. You know, Dr. Mary was talking about how somebody will say you're young enough to be my daughter. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard male politicians say that to me, who say, you know, my last born is exactly your age.
And how do you respond, Minister? How do you respond?
I respond by saying, that's really nice to hear, but here I'm your colleague and I'm your counterpart. And so, you know, the intersection of age and gender, and in some instances, race is massive. And we must never underestimate that. But at the same time, we don't dwell on it. We simply push through because the job ahead is big, and the job ahead requires us to have, you know, backs of steel to simply say that I don't want the next young woman coming be after me to have to answer a question that says, oh, you are young enough to be my child.
Many thanks to South Africa's Basic Education Minister Siviwe Gwarube and Dr. Mary Ayim Segbefia, the head of the Broadcast Journalism Department at Ghana's University of Media Arts and Communications, NAFTI campus. We are truly grateful for your time and insights. Now, at the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Let's head to Northern Nigeria, a region of the country that is very conservative regarding women in leadership. Cultural and religious barriers prevent many women from getting into leadership roles or succeeding them should they fight their way there. However, there are also success stories. Yes, 27-year-old political activist and entrepreneur Nafisat Buge has been appointed as a commissioner in the Kwara state. That there is a sign of bolstering youth representation in the state government. So how is she faring in there? What are the challenges and how is she overcoming them? She joins me for this discussion. All right. So we just want to know from you, Nafisat. You are very young. I said you became a commissioner in one of those conservative states in Nigeria, Kwara State. Can you tell us about your role as a commissioner in that state? What does it entail?
I got appointed November last year, 2023, and as a nominee immediately after my National Youth Service Corps in Nigeria. And my first office, the ministry I headed first was Ministry of Youth Development from December last year, 2023, to June 2024, before I got redeployed to Ministry of Environment. Mm-hmm. And my role as a commissioner, in any ministry, first, you are a public servant there. You work with some administrative staffs, whom we call civil servant in Nigeria. And as the public servant in the ministry, you are the head of the overall head of the ministry who is representing the governor in that ministry.
Tell us about some of the challenges you've faced so far. Have you overcome the cultural and religious barriers in that part of Nigeria?
Wow. I think that barrier is not something that is easy to overcome. And I'm sure you know Kwara State is a northern state too in Nigeria. Yes. And our culture and everything is northern. So you can imagine what is it that is bias against women, and specifically women in politics, in governance. And as young women, there are some of us that are working so hard to break that barrier, break the glass. We got lucky when we had our current governor, His Excellency Governor Abdulrahman Abdulrazak, who doubled as the chairman of Nigerian Governors Forum currently. He came with a different mindset in Kwara State. And as I speak with you, I am proud to say that in the cabinet of His Excellency, the governor of Kwara, there are 20 members of the total cabinet membership is 20. There are 20 commissioners in Kwara State. Among the 20, we have 10 women, we have 10 men.
Ooh, kudos to your governor. That is commendable.
And he has also went further to sign into law a law that advocates of 35% inclusiveness of women in all government offices in the state.
What do you think women like yourself from your community, or rather broadly in Nigeria, need to succeed in leadership roles?
Women need to work hard to break that barrier.
Yeah.
By presenting themselves to be worthy. You know, sometimes you have to, well, after breaking your shell, you also have to work on yourself as a woman so that you don't give that other gender a reason. It's genuine reason to say, oh, can you see now? It's because she's a woman. That's why she's incompetent. Yes. So, you know, you have to build your competency as a woman. You have to work on yourself. You have to work on a lot of things so that the society will not have any reason to come out today and say, oh, or one day to say, oh, look at it now. She did this way, or she got it wrong because she's a woman.
Absolutely. Now, in 30 seconds, enough is that. The youngest commissioner, probably in Nigeria, right? Can you just give advice to young women, young girls who'd also want to take up leadership roles, maybe in politics, maybe in governance, just in 30 seconds, advice for them?
Oh, wow. The first thing I'll ever say to every young woman I meet out there is that, girl, as a young woman, there is no limit to what you can become. There is no limit to what you can do. You just need to look beyond your environment. You need to look beyond your surroundings. And you also have to just work on yourself. First, believe in yourself. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, no one will believe in you more than you believe in yourself.
What a better way to end our discussion. 27-year-old political activist and entrepreneur Nafisa Buke, who's been appointed as a commissioner in the Kwara State northern part of Nigeria. Thank you so much, Nafisat, for joining us on DW Africa Link podcast. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community. Your feedback and participation makes this podcast what it is. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link episodes. Your feedback is crucial to us, and we look forward to hearing from you. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time, it's bye for now.
DW Made for Minds.